ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's a bit hard to sit down to dinner when no one's set the table. And that's a bit what it's been like for the past 10 plus years with electric vehicles. EVs have had a huge price tag compared to classic cars, very limited secondhand options. And where are you going to charge the thing? As hungry as many of us are, we haven't been able to tuck in. But a year ago, the federal government released its electric vehicle strategy, which promised charging support for homes and workplaces, as well as a fuel efficiency standard, which should increase EV supply. And we're already starting to see new, cheaper models come on the market, largely from China. Plus, more rooftop solar is making powering your car cheap and easy, if you're a homeowner, at least. So, is dinner finally served? When it comes to policy frameworks, market forces, and cost of living pressures, what is influencing our decisions around low emissions vehicles? Chris Jones is the president of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association, and Eamon McGinn is a partner with Deloitte Access Economics, and he watches the electric vehicle market very closely. Chris, what are people thinking about when they look at buying a new car?
Oh, I think people are typically going to be finding the vehicle that meets their needs at the lowest price possible. Basically, buying a vehicle is rarely a rational decision. You know, the color of the vehicle is extremely important. The brand, the shape, the size, but also is it affordable to run? I think that question usually comes in second or third. But people are starting to realise that, oh, actually, that's going to make a big difference. And if you can find a vehicle that's cheaper to run, it's a bit of a winner.
And Eamon, from the surveys you've been doing of consumer attitudes, what's the sentiment around EVs at the moment? I mean, particularly on that point Chris makes about affordability, what's been impacting whether people make the switch or not?
Yeah, so in our surveys that we've done of consumers, we kind of find that about 60% of people want to spend less than $40,000 when they're thinking about their new car. And it's just recently that we've seen a number of EVs come in at that price range or under. And like you said, the ones coming from China, the BYDs, the MGs, the GWMs. And, you know, with the price of the car coming down, that total cost of ownership, when you take into account that it's cheaper to charge up than to fuel up, is becoming, you know, something that's checking out for people, particularly in outer suburbs in Sydney and other major cities.
I mean, we've kind of long been told that we should be moving to EVs, going green, doing your bit for the environment. Has that been influencing people's decision making? Has there been a, I wish I could, but the barrier's too high? Like, what's shifted lately?
Yeah, I think when we've asked people about this, people do say that they are, you know, in general, most people are concerned about climate change and reducing emissions in Australia. People who are more concerned about that have expressed higher interest in EVs. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, the dollars come down to a very important part in people's decisions, even if they have good intentions about doing the best thing for the environment. If the right kind of model of car isn't available and it's not available at the right price, then I think it has been hard for people to consider the switch to EVs. But, you know, that's beginning to change now, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of those changes. Like, firstly, Eamon, how does Australia compare with the rest of the world when it comes to EV uptake?
We're a little bit behind. So at the moment, Australia, EVs make up about 10% of new vehicle sales. Last year, over the whole year, it was about 8%. So, you know, we're trending up, which is a good thing. If we look at the vehicle stock out there, it's well less than 1% of all the vehicles in Australia are EVs. So we're still talking pretty low numbers. If I go over to, you know, the leading country in the world, Norway, in terms of EV uptake, new vehicle sales, EVs in Norway are about 90%. And of the vehicle stock in Norway, it's about 25%. So you can see we're, you know, very far behind where, you know, the leading country in terms of EV uptake is at.
And what is behind the like less stock, I suppose, or why we don't have so much stock or supply? You know, I spoke a little bit before about the electric vehicle strategy, the fuel efficiency standard. Can you explain exactly what that is and how that might help that issue?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Norway is a somewhat unusual example. Norway's been highly supportive of the transition to EVs for quite a few decades now. So they're like well advanced of Australia in terms of the kind of infrastructure and the kind of perception of EVs in that country. If we look to Australia, I think, you know, it has been slower to see the type of vehicles arrive in Australia that Australians really love to drive. So the SUVs and the utes, we're getting some new good SUV models at affordable prices that are doing really well on sales. The utes is another question. When it comes to the policies that people are exploring and thinking about at the moment, I think those are important. There's some debates going on around them at the moment. They're important in terms of like smoothing and maybe accelerating the transition towards EVs a little bit. But I think the overwhelming force is going to be, you know, the price of EVs coming down, people's preferences for, you know, an electric vehicle that's easy to charge at home, those sorts of things, rather than the policy might work around the edges, I would say.
You're listening to Life Matters, and you're hearing right there from Eamon McGinn. He's a partner with Deloitte Access Economics, watching the electric vehicle market very closely. I've also got Chris Jones with me, president of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association, a volunteer-run not-for-profit organisation. We're talking about how viable EVs are. Is the dam about to burst in Australia when it comes to EV uptake? Are we on an exciting crest of a wave? Well, Chris, I want to know a bit more about what Eamon was saying there about infrastructure, about charging in particular. You know, there's long been this sense that EVs are inaccessible, and, you know, whether that's because of the high upfront cost of getting them or the fact that you just can't charge it anywhere. Is that changing in a meaningful way now? What is happening to some of those practical barriers?
I would dispute that difficulty charging point. Australia does actually have just about every household is a detached single home with off-street parking. So we're doing okay on being able to charge your vehicle at home. Any 10-amp power point in your home or in your carport is capable of charging your EV. Sure, it'll be a slower charge than a publicly accessible fast charger, but that's perfectly adequate for most people's driving needs. Where we're starting to run into a bottleneck is when people, they've got their EV, they've been living with it for a few weeks, few months, they're like, all right, let's try a longer trip. And so they drive down the coast or something like that, and they need to stop halfway and use a fast charger. This is where we're starting to see the bottlenecks. So the charger is either it's either busy, or, you know, there's not enough of them, or worse, it's broken or it's inoperable and you can't charge your vehicle. You have to find another one, hopefully not too far away. So we're starting to see a few growing issues around public charging infrastructure and fast charging infrastructure. But I do know that the federal government is trying to push additional funding and resources into getting those intercity and interregional fast charging installations built.
I would pull you up, Chris, on the fact about like home charging infrastructure being accessible to everybody, because, you know, what about people who live in apartments and renters and people who don't have off-street parking? Because, you know, it may be like a large amount of people, but it certainly isn't everyone. That's I definitely couldn't have an EV and charge it at my house.
Sure.
So what do those people do? How can they access this?
Yeah, so for the, you're right. For those people, they will need to find public charging infrastructure to charge their vehicles. But I would also add that if you live in that kind of high density arrangement living, the need, your personal need for a car will be significantly reduced. You probably live with a region with pretty good public transport and bike infrastructure connectivity. That said, it is difficult to get EV charge points installed in apartments. And in if you do have parking at your apartment, it's quite difficult to get body corporates to approve the installation of even power points, let alone charging stations for electric vehicles. And so we're kind of hoping that there'll be some changes in attitudes around that. So there's no good reason to deny someone the ability to install a charge point in your underground car park to charge your vehicle if the need arises.
We can hope to see it happen. We are talking about EVs, changes to attitudes, and also just the uptake and change of uptake in electric vehicles in Australia. You're hearing from Chris Jones, president of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association. I also have Eamon McGinn, a partner with Deloitte Access Economics, on the line with me too. We're getting plenty of calls and we'll go to those now. Quinton in Sydney, you're thinking about making the switch very soon. What are you considering?
That's right. Certainly within the next year or two, I can see the number of models increasing and they're much more affordable. My limitation is that we live in an older home in the eastern suburbs of Clovelly. We don't have off-street parking, but the other side of the street does. They're more recent homes, and I've been wondering about, and I've seen a few houses with EVs parked out the front and leads coming out the garage door, or they're in the garage, and I'm just wondering about sharing our neighbours, sharing charging infrastructure. You know, there could even be an app that facilitates neighbours making their charge infrastructure, the private charge infrastructure, available to neighbours that don't have garages.
I think that's a really lovely idea, Quinton. Chris, is there anything like that being discussed among owners at the moment, some sort of, reciprocal benefit sort of scheme where we can share our charges?
Well, at the most basic level, I think it's a lovely way to foster community in your, in your street. Yes, believe it or not, there are actually companies developing apps that allow you to use other people's charging infrastructure. They call it the Airbnb of EV charging, but of course everything's called that these days. That's certainly an option. There are on-street charging bollards that can be installed, but they are very expensive. So we certainly don't want people tripping over cables as they walk down the footpath.
Imagine it's just the whole street is just like our living room with all the extension cables. I've got Rod from Cootamundra who's called in. Rod, you've just bought an EV.
G'day. I'm a poor old pensioner, and with the assistance of my daughter, I've got a loan, and unbelievably, they will not lend you, even if you owned your own house, more than $5,000 if you're a pensioner, which is quite amazing because you're on an income that's always going to be there until you die, and then you'll get the house. But anyhow, I bought an EV last November. It has what they call V2L and also lithium iron phosphate batteries, so that means it will last much longer. And I'm just putting solar panels on my house, and I'm in the process of trying to kind of integrate the EV and the V2L, which is called vehicle to load, into the power system in my house. So I can charge run my house from the battery in my car. Mm. Now, the battery in my car is 51 kilowatt hours, which is well over three times the size of a Powerwall 2.
It's a really great option for that battery problem, which we have also discussed here on Life Matters in the past too. If you want to check your podcast feed, we've definitely talked about the issues around battery supply and solar. But Rod, I'm so glad that you're getting onto that and it's saving you money. Thanks for calling. Moira in Coffs Harbour, you are loving the EV life as well. Tell us about it.
Yes, we bought a new EV in October 22 with the $3,000 New South Wales EV rebate, and we love it. It's a work in progress with the EV charging stations, you go there, you often register on the app PlugShare, which is like a informal queue to say you want to go to a station and you'll be there, you're registering, you'll be there for the next hour. And it just helps people, and you get to see exactly details about the charging point and if it's working well and so forth. And you meet great people there. You might have to wait 15 minutes till a spot becomes free, and you chat, and they're all very fascinated in their EV, and we share things. We talk about our EV and other charging places and new technology, the sort of thing your previous caller just mentioned, whether people are getting into that now. It's fantastic.
And do you feel like that there's enough supply, there's enough places for you to charge? Do you ever worry about your car breaking down halfway through the day?
Yeah, I have EV range anxiety as the driver. But I research stuff, and it's changing all the time. There are new companies with new chargers. I mean, it is crazy. I've got about 5 apps for different companies. Each one requires nowadays, with the new kind of wave of EV chargers, they require your account details on an app. You've got to do all that. Sometimes you've got to do all that when you get to the charging point. But you get used to it, and it all happens, and we come home and we plug into an ordinary power point and charge in the daytime off our solar panels.
Bit of a difference, a bit of a different way of working, but, you know, it's just a change that you make. Moira in Coffs Harbour, thanks so much for calling. Hemant in New South Wales, how much are you saving with your electric vehicle?
Hi, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I'm getting a yearly saving for my fuel, almost $1,800. I know it looks different because first year of my Nissan Leaf, I got a free charging in a regional area for NRMA charger point. Recently, it is being started charging cost for the use of it. So I charged from my home now. So the solar panels at home is giving me relief because daytime it is a feed-in tariff. And nighttime, I got a special plan for EV car charging, which is 7 cents. And ultimately, weekly, just $3 or $6 coming up.
Wow.
And that's all the calculation shows that we should stop depending on the fast chargers. That is for tourism purpose. If you're living in a big areas, low density, surely make your rooftop, fill the cars in the nighttime. And I think we must understand the energy requirement and regulation. Currently in the morning and evening, we are having high demand of energy. So do not connect your charging that time. Just do it in nighttime or afternoon when the too much solar energy is available. So everyone has to start working on how much we really need and what is the best timing. It saves money.
Absolutely.
I experience it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at a time where we're all quite worried about the cost of living, it's a really, you know, clearly an option that people are really enjoying. And, of you know, there's the added benefit of it being lower emissions. But Martin from Newcastle is also called in because, Martin, obviously, if your car's being charged by solar, fabulous, but that's not the case for everyone.
Hello, you're speaking to me, are you?
Yes, I am. Hi, Martin.
Okay. Look, okay. Well, firstly, I'm an engineer. I became an engineer in 1985. I've been a car enthusiast since the 1960s when I was a child. And obviously, I have interest in this topic. The first thing I want to say is that electric vehicles are only as clean as the energy you put in them. So in our country, we are 1/3 renewable energy and still 2/3 dirty energy. So we charge our vehicles with dirty energy. And this is not good. This is not what we're trying to do. Now, hybrids, I've done a calculation comparing a Toyota and a BYD, common models, and the hybrid actually emits less CO2 than the BYD in New South Wales. Now, emissions are all based on your energy. So if you live in Tasmania, you can buy an EV and it will be cleaner because most of Tasmania's energy is clean energy. But if you, say, for instance, in Queensland, buy an EV, most of your energy will be dirty. Now, sure, we can charge from our solar panels, but what we're doing there, in most cases, is robbing Peter to pay Paul. What we do is we put the energy in the car and then we have to take the rest of our energy from the grid, which is dirty. So there are many reasons why not EVs will be, in time, the best choice, but only when we have a certain amount of renewable energy. And for now, hybrid cars, like what Toyota, for instance, offers, are the cheaper still and emit the less CO2. And we should take these things step by step, not jump straight into EVs because they actually don't suit us. They suit Norway perfectly, but they don't suit Queensland very well. So you know, I've got a lot more I could say on this
for
topic.
For sure, but Martin, that's a really great point that you make, and I'm going to put that to Chris Jones, President of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association. Chris, what Martin's saying there is that I guess the grid is not set up yet to be perfectly, you know, viable or environmentally friendly when it comes to driving EVs. Hybrids are better. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, look, yes, if you're plugging into the grid, for sure, a fair chunk of Australia's energy is still coming from renewables. It's still coming from coal. That is changing. That's not the car's fault, though. I mean, the grid is constantly getting cleaner. And as soon as we've created the demand for cleaner energy through our vehicles, the motivation to keep on installing more wind and solar and hydro is quite obviously there. The other thing with hybrids is that they've got the worst of both worlds as well, in that they've got a petrol engine that needs servicing. They still run on liquid fossil fuels. They don't run on anything but liquid fossil fuels. And one of the main reasons people are keen to move to EVs is because we can power our vehicles with locally produced energy, not energy we need to import. So I think he's right. EVs are absolutely the cleaner option longer term, but they won't be unless people go out and buy them.
Well, Chris, Stephen Sidney has called in and he's looking at an option that might be sort of in between those, again, so hybrid. Steve, what are you looking to buy?
Hi. We just don't drive enough to warrant the EVs, in our opinion. And the plug-in hybrid seems to be a sort of halfway measure which would suit our needs, despite the fact that the comment just been made that it's got two drivetrains and you've actually got two engines, and but for the amount that we use, we think that we would be able to use solely electric, 100% electric, and just have that gas not have the range anxiety, because if we do go on a long trip, we can switch to petrol. I really like the comments from the two experts here, please.
Yeah. Chris, would you like to start on this one, help Steve work out what he should get?
Yeah, look, if you intend on being a one-car household, then a plug-in hybrid is absolutely a good option for you. The good thing is that a lot of people who go and buy plug-in hybrids will drive them around for a year and pride themselves on having never put a tank of fuel in them, because they could run entirely on electricity all along. And so to that, you might think, well, perhaps maybe you could buy a shorter range electric vehicle and you would have been further ahead. But the utility of being able to do longer drives is certainly quite handy. Certainly a good option. And they exist for exactly that niche reason.
Steve, I hope that's helped you make a bit of a decision or consider it a bit more fully. We're nearly out of time for calls, but I'll take one more from Billy in Melbourne. You're an EV driver. Tell me about your experiences.
Oh, hi. Yeah, we decided to buy an EV for environmental reasons, but actually what I've found is we just love it purely for ease and enjoyment. And when people talk about EVs, there's always a lot of focus on the technical stuff and range anxiety, and nobody talks about actually how much easier your life is when you don't have to buy petrol. We plug ours in the garage, it charges overnight, costs $4 or $5 a week. I had to borrow a friend's car recently because ours was in the shop, and we had to, when it needed fuel, we had to drive to a petrol station, put petrol in it, pay over $100 a tank, and I just thought, this is so backwards. I can't believe that I used to live like this and not think it was a hassle. So I would say, if you're thinking about going for an EV, we have a Kia Niro and absolutely love it. Just do it. Your life will get easier on the fueling and energy front, not harder.
Thanks for that, Billy. Finding that living with an EV or operating one is easier. This is Life Matters. I'm Nat Tencich. You're hearing from Chris Jones, President of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association, Eamon McGinn from Deloitte Access Economics. Julian from Bruny Island has a really great point here that I'd like to finish on. The biggest cost, he says, is depreciation. I spend about $5,000 on a vehicle. You can buy a lot of fuel for the depreciation on a new electric vehicle. I carry extra fuel in Jerry's, Ford Streams, and carry a ton regularly and do my own servicing. I can't do this with an EV. EVs could be good, but everything on offer is too flash. It's too fragile. I can't get a basic no-frills four-wheel drive flat tray. It's nowhere on the horizon. Let's just talk about this a little bit. Eamon, what is the secondhand market looking like? Should we be worried about the fact that vehicles depreciate quite greatly and that they're also a bit more difficult to service? They need specialised knowledge to for the upkeep of the vehicles. So how are we going to be able to keep, you know, cycling these vehicles through the market? Are there legitimate concerns here?
I think the concerns are legitimate in that there's still a lot to be figured out. There is a secondhand market for EVs. People are buying secondhand EVs already, and it's all working very well. Like about 50% of people want to look in the secondhand market, so it's an important market, you know, to give confidence to people to purchase an EV that they'll be able to sell or buy in the secondhand market. I think the question around like servicing and maintenance, EVs are actually easier to service than a conventional vehicle. People will probably be spending less on maintenance for their EV than on their current conventional vehicle. But you're right that, you know, it might take a while for those skills in the industry to, you know, pick up and to be as prevalent. And then the other point of the person that messaged in, I think it sounds like, you know, what they're looking for is a SUV or a ute. And he's spot on that, you know, utes are a real gap in the Australian market at the moment. They're a very popular model in Australia. And we just don't have the EVs in the market just yet to meet that need. So I think, you know, for people who are looking for that type of vehicle, it's probably less so the availability of a secondhand vehicle. It's more the availability of a vehicle at all.
Oh, so things are getting easier, but still a ways to go for certain vehicles. Eamon McGinn, thank you so much for being with us. Chris Jones as well. Thank you for joining us today on Life Matters.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
Eamon McGinn is a partner with Deloitte Access Economics, and Chris Jones is president of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.